My brother killed my sister. They locked him up for a long time. But he got out and he came after me. But he killed a lot of my friends. It happened on Halloween. You've heard the story.
Who hasn't? Michael Myers. It was like 20 years ago, right?
1978.
And the girl that... What happened to the sister? She died, right?
No, she faked her death. Hoping and praying every year that her brother will find her.
Hello everyone, happy Halloween and welcome to the final episode of PMG Podcast's Halloween Horror Month. I'm your host, Marcel Delgado, here with Alonso Castillo.
What up?
And Jose Orozco.
Howdy, howdy.
We were supposed to have Paul with us today, but due to unforeseen circumstances, we're not able to have him. But he's here in spirit with us, as is the spirit of the season, because we're doing our franchise that we've come back to, Halloween. We're doing Halloween H20, H20, however you want to say it. This was...
Halloween 2. Number two.
Zero.
The second Halloween.
Kind of.
The second Halloween 3.
This movie came out 20 years after the first movie came out, because at this point, the Halloween franchise, since the last time that we ourselves talked about it, went from here and back again. And Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, they decided they were going to go into a different route. They were going to make it an anthology film with the...
Halloween 3, number one.
Mm-hmm. Then we got Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, when that didn't work out. And that was a very... It has its audience. I like bits of it. It's cute. It's a little creepy. It's not as violent as I want it to be, but it's also very low budget. And we kept on saying that in 5 and 6 with Curse and Revenge of Michael Myers. Because then it became like this cult that was trying to get Michael Myers and control him and do his bidding. And then to father his niece's child. And it got very incestuous. And then Paul Rudd was in it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot all
that's hot.
About that.
Right around
this... The killings got a lot cooler though, don't you think?
They did get a little better. Ones? They got a little more, a lot more violent.
Maybe that's what it is, yeah.
I think the opening to 6, my favorite one was when he just picks up, I think it's an orderly or a nurse, and just pins her on this needle on the wall, and she hangs there. Kind of like the one from the first one, but it's just done so violently in comparison to like the original killing. But yeah, this movie, funny enough, I wasn't a big fan of this when I first watched it. We'll get into that.
How old were you, Marcel?
I was about like 19. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was...
Oh, you weren't that young either.
No, it was about like 6 years ago.
What were your original thoughts on the film?
My original thoughts were just kind of meh, but I kind of always mixed this and Resurrection up. That was what I always remembered. I remember confusing them because I watched them all back to back. A lot of these movies I watched for the first time when I got the Scream Factory Blu-ray box set, which is amazing and I love. And shout out to Scream Factory and Shout Factory. You guys are killing it in the Blu-ray department. But yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan of it. What about you guys?
What year did this movie actually come out?
1998.
98. Okay, so I think, honestly, for me, this probably was the first Halloween movie I ever watched. I used to watch horror movies at a way too young of an age with my family, but I believe that this was probably the first time, the first Halloween I ever watched, even before the original or any of the other ones. And so for me, I always kind of had this like weird love for it, and I never really understood it other than the fact that like when I was a kid, I remember always being kind of very enthralled, like floored by this movie, you know. And honestly, I mean, I hadn't really rewatched any of the Halloweens until maybe till a couple of years ago, and I only watched a couple of them back then. And rewatching H20 now was like the first time in a long time, and those feelings that I remembered as a child very much hold up to the feelings I have now still. So yeah, I mean, my opinions of anything have grown for more of a love and enjoyment for this movie.
So the first time I watched this, I wasn't very young. I was already in my late teens, I'm sure. And I didn't like it that much. I remember it being boring. I thought it was really boring. And I remember just thinking, like, nothing really happens. And that there was, like, two deaths. And I was like, meh. Rewatching it, I liked it a little more this time around. There were more than two deaths. I still feel like there was something missing. But I can get into that later. But I definitely enjoyed it more the second time I watched it.
I also remember seeing this movie a lot. It was the most successful one to most of us, I feel. Because it was, like, before this, it was Revenge of Michael Myers, which was, like, mid to, like, early 90s. And I remember seeing this in Blockbuster all the time. I saw this and Resurrection always just in the front every Halloween. They'd always just do up the end caps and just make them bring all of the horror movies out and just push it. And the box art never really caught my eye, so I never watched it. This movie, while there was some things missing from those original movies, there was definitely a lot that was brought back from the original movies as far as the spirit. And you get that right in the beginning of the movie, which is, on my opinion, one of the strongest openings to a horror movie. Not to mention just a strong statement. The last movie that they're wanting to have you remember. Because it starts with Mr. Sandman by the Chordettes, which is the final song that played in Halloween 2. Great way to just say, forget 3, 4, 5, and 6. We're moving ahead and we're moving on from everything that we had in the past. And just the way that the
camp... This is the new Halloween 3.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome.
I remember when you were talking about this last week before, right after we finished watching Climax. I remember I wasn't sure if this was a reboot or if it was a sequel to 4, 5, and 6. And that was always something that just confused me. And to an extent, listening to some of the filmmakers in this one, it seemed like they were kind of also confused on where they were going to go about it, but they were trying their best to kind of make this... It was a half reboot.
I've only really seen 1 and 2, and then this one, and then obviously like the newer ones. So I feel like to me, this kind of very much... like flowed, you know, very much from like any of the other films that I had seen previously. As for like the opening of the scene, I really enjoy the opening. I think it draws a very good, I would even say like modern feel to the way Michael Myers is in this world, but still carrying a lot of the spirit from like the original Halloween. And that's something I think, like you said, that I really love about this is that this movie carries that same sort of like enjoyment that you had watching the very first Halloween very much in this one. It's like the same heart is there. And that's something I think I really enjoyed about H2O. I think it's something, but where the first film was a little bit kind of like the invention of it, this one already kind of had a little bit prior knowledge to kind of go on. So it was able to take those elements and then amplify them a little bit. And that's something I really liked about H2O.
Right away, I just thought, poor carving technique, because it makes you think it's this hand holding this knife that's going in for a stab, like a murder stab.
Right.
And it's just the lady carving a pumpkin. And it's just like, that's not how you carve a pumpkin.
I think they were going for more.
You hurt yourself.
They were trying to invoke the imagery.
For the sake of the imagery. No, I
get
it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I get it.
It's from that first, but that first poster.
I couldn't help but be like,
but I get it.
That lady would mess herself up. And then immediately after that, Joseph Gordon-Levitt showing up. Kind of obnoxious.
He's still charming,
I immediately
though.
Hope he dies, you know? And then, but I related because when he's investigating the house for the lady and he like scare smashes up the kitchen, I was just like, honestly, same. I couldn't hate on him.
For real.
He grabs the beer. He just chills around. I love that little comment. He's like, yeah, you know, they did mess up your kitchen. So some stuff might be missing from them. All right, bye. I love the fact that they brought back the character of Marion. From that, she was in 2. She was also in the first one. She was the one that Michael stole her car. And like to me, like I do like the fact that she put up a bit of a fight. And I do like this is when I start trying to figure out. Whenever we watch a Halloween movie, I'm like, what type of Michael is this? How is he gonna like move? What's his killing style? And he's very silent in this movie, but a little more violent. And I think that goes into what you're saying, Lonzo, where it's like it adds a contemporary feel, where it's like a little more modern with a little bit of that style from the original.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite things is like even though the first Halloween has like masterful like cinematography and like the way the camera moves is very. I mean, I think that was the first film to ever use like Steadicam, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
This one very much incorporates a lot of those same filming techniques, and I think the way they use Michael. Kind of in like something that you've always enjoyed, which is like him being the shape, this like origin of evil. He feels very much like that. Like that's something I kind of always loved about, for example, like films like Final Destination, is there's always this feeling of like looming death, like around the corner. And in this one, especially even like right from the opening, like as Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like walking around the house and like things just kind of feel very eerie and off. Like you always kind of feel like you're just going to see Michael around the corner, and they treat him as this like silent force of like evil. And when he does strike, he strikes right very violently. And that's something I enjoy so much about this movie. Cause I feel like it reminds me of a little bit of like in The Dark Knight, where when the Joker shows up, you know, shit's about to go down. And it's same thing for this. Like every time Michael shows up, I'm like excited to see what's about to happen.
And I think that's because the director, Steve Miner, he's a little bit of a veteran when it comes to horror. He's worked with Jamie Lee Curtis before. But two of his earlier movies that he made was Friday the 13th Part 2 and 3, which is why when Joseph Gordon-Levitt shows up, he's wearing the hockey mask. It's a nice little nod right there. A lot of it...
So they could think of that little detail, but when Michael Myers grabs the knife from the knife block, it's the only knife in the knife block. Like, there's no other knives in there. Come on. Why is there a block with one knife in it, and that's just so that can be the one he grabs?
It was the only
clean knives
one.
In there. Come on.
There's a lot of little things here and there where I'm like, just imagery here. A lot of shots where I'm just like, this is kind of done for just to look nice. I don't know necessarily whether or not this serves the full movie or if we're just like, I think this is going to look cool. It looks almost like a music video, like that intro when they're sweeping through the hallways and it's like, whose perspective is this? What does this add to it? I don't know. There's a lot of decisions here that I do like. However, there's a lot of like little things here and there that are missing, which it could be a lot of this could be not the director's choice. Mustafa Akkad, who has been producing these movies since, you know, the beginning, has been notoriously known to be very picky and very possessive of the franchise Michael and just in general everything else. Even down to wanting to control the ending and wanting to change it. But yeah, we get introduced to Laurie a little bit later on the movie. She's Carrie Tate in this movie.
Carrie Tate.
Yeah. She went through the witness protection program. She's on the run, which is... That's another bit where I'm like, four, you're dealing with Jamie. She has a daughter named Jamie that just was like left to just, you know, be an orphan. Apparently, this is what she did. She just went on a... Just dropped her daughter off, went and made her own life in California and just, you know, had another son and another marriage. And she's the headmistress of the school.
That's why I'm pretty sure it just picks up after two. And it's just Halloween 3, the second one.
Yeah.
There is that bit in the intro where we get like all of those newspaper clippings and you see where it says Laurie died in a car crash. That was how they said she died in 4 and 5.
Oh, sure. But she faked that.
Yeah. But it's just, I'm going to choose to ignore it as well. It's just one of those things where it's like, it's the timelines are getting a little muddy.
I feel like they did that to be cute.
Yeah, I think that was probably a way to acknowledge the ones that they kind of axed out of the canon. I guess the best way I could reference that is probably like what Disney did. You know, Disney took like a lot of the things from the extended universe in Star Wars, and then they just kind of like, the things we really like, we're going to just add on again, but just like slightly different.
I do gotta say, I like the way that this film feels, because it felt very much like Scream. Very 90s. Same editor as Scream 2, 3, and New Nightmare.
I wonder if, because I don't know, like, I don't know if you guys had any problem with the pacing, but I didn't. Like, I thought the pacing was really well.
The pacing was well until the end, for me. I thought it was really, it needed to maybe have another extra like 20 minutes or so because it...
Yeah, I think another 20 minutes would have been beneficial.
It has a good pace. It has a slow burn pace where like just really living in these characters' lives. You're trying to figure out what Laurie's life is like. And then Michael's there. And it has a really nice just cat and mouse, kind of like that first movie. But with that first movie, we had a lot more time to just have Michael play. And I don't think we get much time here.
Yeah.
I did like the beginning, though, when they're just kind of setting up what she's like now and all her, like, trauma and how it's affected her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the PTSD.
And I feel like that's a big part of the movie. Yeah, is, like, trauma and how we deal with it and how it affects us. And in this movie specifically, even, like, how it affects and is passed on to, like, your kids. You know, how something that happened to you can still be passed on or affected effective to like your children and future generations.
Yeah, I did like that. I like the fact that a lot of the past events were very much acknowledged, and it makes it feel like very real. Like, I feel like they brought like a depth to a lot of the characters. Even the son, like her son, kind of. And I think he did a good enough job sort of showing that he's been dealing with this for years, because his mother's just been so overbearing because of how just traumatized she's been.
Yeah.
And I think and I think that maybe plays into their maybe a little bit of their chemistry, I guess you would say. Because there's like a little bit of a love between them that you could tell, obviously, but there is this like sense of like, come on, mom, like you're fucking crazy, but I love you.
Yeah, I really like that. To me, whenever you see like family issues in movies, they usually play it for like just, especially in like these in slashers, it's very much just like the groaning teenager. There is a lot of love here. They had really good chemistry, whether that be because Josh Hartnett's just a really good actor and we're having to work with Jamie Lee Curtis, obviously. A lot of good character beats. I did love the way they handle the PTSD in this movie, because we've seen the similar way they try to handle it in the new 2018 one. I think they handled it a lot better here.
Well, I think they showed a more maybe realistic or more relatable, because she uses like coping mechanisms that I think a lot of people, you know, she uses the pills, the medications, the prescriptions. She's a drunk or alcoholic. I shouldn't say drunk because she's functioning, but she's an alcoholic, you know, and you can tell that a lot of that is a result of that trauma she experienced. And it's almost like, can you ever recover from that? You know, is it even possible? Kind of a thing.
Yeah, which is also cool how like I don't know, there's definitely a lot of themes at play in this movie. Like even it's very much on the nose, obviously, for the audience to get it. But when they're in the classroom and they're talking about that book, and they're referencing having to face your fears, you know, which obviously is a foreshadowing for what's going to happen later in the movie, as Michael being the actual monster. Those like little touches that made this movie to me feel a lot more like there was like at least a good amount of thought behind it, and not just kind of like a thoughtless sequel where they're just like, oh, we're gonna just have bigger kills and that's it. Like that's where I think a lot of the, I guess you would say, like the heart or the spirit of the original Halloween carries over into this one is doesn't just feel like they slapped things together. It felt like there was at least a little bit of thought.
There was love.
That scene is a parallel to in the first movie when Laurie Strode she's a student instead of the teacher. In this new movie, she's in the classroom, and I think she's listening to a very similar type of literature or lecture on like a similar kind of theme. But
it was from Frankenstein.
And now she's the teacher, kind of delivering the same sort of message
with a young Michelle Williams.
So, yeah, what the hell? She showed up. I was like, wait, I know that face. What the heck?
A very small role for her. And I thought it was so intricate to see her, because I almost didn't recognize her.
And also, young Alan Parrish from Jumanji.
Yeah, he was Charlie. You guys
didn't notice?
He was Charlie. I had to look that up because I was like, I'm trying. You scour IMDb, like, where have they been now? They're like, you know, we don't get Adam E to do
Han
it.
Adam Bird.
Mm-hmm. Jodie Lynn, she was in
Beard?
I saw her in She's All That when I was a kid. I could have sworn she was in The Craft, but maybe it was just the way that she looked in this movie, like that goth 90s aesthetic that she had grown with it.
Goth 90s aesthetic.
You know, it's a whole thing. I liked our little entourage of teenagers here, our friend group.
I wish I got more of them.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, to me, like, none of them felt like fodder, you know what I mean? Like to a degree, not that I wanted any of them to necessarily die, but all of them seemed interesting enough to where I feel like if I didn't want them to die, you know, like I didn't hate any of the characters. They weren't really annoying. They just really felt like kids. Like a lot of the time they felt like kids to me. So when Michael kind of shows up, it does feel a bit of like a whole snap. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. There's something I really enjoy about the way they handled Michael in this movie. And he feels so smart. And, like, with such a purpose, you know?
Well, he only is able to get in because the security guard's the worst. LL Cool J is a terrible security guard. He literally opens the gate and just lets him walk right past him. Literally walks right past him.
Fool, there's a car that just stops in the middle of, like, your gate.
So you open the gate and let the weird, creepy car in? Why would you do that?
That's the minute you're like, sus. I'm not about to open this gate.
Sus. AF, you call the cops.
Yeah, but he's LL Cool J. He handles that on his own, right?
I loved his character in this movie. Was he the best? No. He's pretty bad at his fucking job. But I love the little banter here and there with him and his girl. It was hilarious.
I think you could have taken that away and given me more character development.
We could have also gotten that. I saw a lot of cringy conversation from the producers about how they said, so they, when they were explaining why they brought him, they're like, yeah, so we saw, it was Mustafa Akkad's son. He was like, yeah, so we noticed that these movies are very popular with the African American demographic. I'm like, oh, I'm so fucking say that shit. Come on.
Is that why they brought out Busta Rhymes and Tyra Banks in
Resurrection? Made by the same fucking family, I assume, as much.
Boy. Yeah.
I mean, ugh. I do love the fact that LL Cool J's in this movie. I agree with you, Jose. Could have had a little bit more. I do like that he didn't die first.
I thought he did.
They had a little fake out scene where I was just like, didn't you just fucking kill him?
Marcel, you've seen all the Halloweens. Mm-hmm. Is this the smartest Michael like that they've shown? Where we see him, because I don't remember exactly like every like if they show a lot of his actions. I know in the first one they show him a good amount, but like a lot of the time I feel like he's very much like an unstoppable force. Like he's just kind of like walking through these like kind of like motions. But in this one, like you see him like pick up keys and try to open doors, or like kind of like outsmart, I guess, like the dumb security guard. But is there other movies where he does that, where we actually see it versus like you know, just to infer it, like where we actually see him like kind of like use his head a bit?
I still say that he is the smartest and the most, just he has a mission and he's going to get it done in the original, because that's a whole master plan. He had years to wait for that and plan it and just execute it. I think this is definitely one of the better Michaels out of the ones that I've seen, because 4, 5, and 6, he kind of just gets really just... he's just reacting comically sometimes. But yeah, like there's those little bits like with like the keys, or just like with the...
that part was really scary when they were stuck in that little gate area.
Fuck that.
Dropped the keys.
That's the thing I love about this one, H2O. It's like I'm always on the edge of my seat. I'm like, hurry, hurry, please hurry. I always freak out in this one.
That's the thing, is like when
an idiot for dropping those keys.
She's so fucking stupid. I'm like, why don't you grab it? Just fucking reach and go grab that shit. It's not hard. Like the amount of time you're spending to try to like get this key is gonna be negated by the fact that you just didn't just reach out there and get it or something like that. He's gonna pick it up and figure it out. He's not a fucking idiot. But yeah, no, I don't know. To me, he moves like a cat a lot in this movie.
He moves like Spider-Man. I'm sorry. There's just that one scene. I have to talk about it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Spider-Man drops.
The strength on that man.
From like, I was just like, I get it. He's super strong, but it looked kind of dumb.
You didn't like that?
It looked kind of dumb, dude.
I like that Jamie Lee Curtis turned it around on him, though.
It really just felt out of place, and I was just like, oh my god.
I actually like that. It looked cool. It showed off more so how strong he was, but also now that I'm thinking about him, just kind of like, all right, I'm just gonna pull and just hold myself up here. My core has been really just, it's just doing
Isn't
its all.
Like 50 something in this movie also. In the first one, he was like 20 something. Okay, I can get behind that. He's like 50 something in this movie.
Yeah.
Come on, dude.
Have you seen Arnold Schwarzenegger? That man looks amazing. No. No, I mean, I don't know. Like, Michael, I guess, after the second one had that, like, force of nature, like, supernatural elements, you know,
he's got
like
the him curse. Surviving. The you know, curse of Thor.
Shit. And so then, like, I feel like, I don't know, like, whenever I see, like, unbelievable shit, like, him doing stuff, like, when he lifts somebody up with just the knife, and I'm just like, I mean, you know, if that's possible, anything's possible.
No, of course, that's a brutal thing. Like, I didn't disbelieve that he could do it. That wasn't it just looked weird and awkward.
Oh, okay, yeah. Like, it definitely, okay.
It's a movement that would be out of the character, basically.
Yeah, that's really more what it was.
It's more of like a Jason thing.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I wasn't like, oh, he would never do that. Or not that he would never, but he could never do that, you know? He doesn't have the ability. It was just like, why? And he wasn't doing it anywhere else before in the movie. I don't know.
Physicality. You need to have your rules when it comes to like your movement of your character. What can they do? What they can't do? What's in their toy box?
Like if Freddy Krueger did something like that, 100%, of course.
Yeah, Freddy can do whatever he wants. That all gets brought down to the fact that there was a lot of decisions here that were made last second, because this movie was originally supposed to be just called Halloween 7, and it was going to be a straight-to-video production. The minute they brought the Weinsteins in and they brought in Dimension Films as a part of it, I forgot it wasn't Harvey, I think it was Bob Weinstein, called Jamie Lee Curtis, got her on involved, and they called the writer of the movie. Like, hey, so good news and bad news. Bad news, we're gonna scrap your entire script. We're not gonna use any of it. Good news, getting a full feature theater production. Jamie Lee Curtis said, "Yep, you're gonna have to write it all over again." The original idea of this was that it was an incredible. I'm very happy we didn't go with that original copy of the movie, because the first draft was grabbed a lot from Silence of the Lambs and Scream, where there was a copycat killer on the loose of Michael Myers, and the cops were trying to get a serial killer to help them find out who he was and try to find Michael Myers, the copycat killers, and it was originally going to be Charlie, the friend. And I'm happy they didn't go in that route. That would have been interesting to see how it would go, but I've seen that already.
That's very Scream-esque. I mean, if you're gonna go Scream, that's very, very Scream-esque. I know something that we all kind of mentioned, but we were talking a little bit before, was his mask and his ability to see his eyes. Which how do you feel about that, Marzo? Because I know you had some strong feelings before.
I absolutely hate every moment that we see Michael's face and we see his eyes. Nothing pulls me out of the idea and the concept of him being the shape and evil, having the devil's eyes, the blackest eyes.
What about the first one when they show his face?
I don't mind it in the first one because it's just for a half of a second and it's done in this just very brief moment. And I don't know, it's just the execution of it. I don't know. But it just takes me out of it whenever I see his eyes. And we see a lot of that in this movie.
Yeah, we do.
And that's always been my biggest issue with it. I also am not a big fan of the mask.
I honestly really like this mask. I really enjoy the fact that we can't see his eyes. Because I think whenever him and Laurie kind of like stare down, it like helps build up, in my opinion, kind of like that final moment that we get between them. And at least for me, it kind of feels like that sort of brother-sister vibe that, like, I don't know, that there's almost like this like weird love, like family, no matter what. And I don't know, like, maybe it's because of my culture. but I don't know, that kind of ends up bringing up a lot of things that I feel like I tend to like really like about it, is this whole like family ties thing that feels very strong whenever I see like his eyes and I see Laurie staring back, and like it's like this weird kind of like love, hate, danger thing that kind of plays on the emotions a little bit. I don't know. That's why for me, I think the eyes kind of, in a way, do a lot.
I don't think there's any love there.
No,
you know.
Well, not from Michael, but I mean like from
even from her.
From her, like,
she
yeah.
loves, I don't think she loves him at all.
When I can see Michael Myers' eyes, I think it helps build up like this like kind of like family connection of like. When it's weird because I feel like when he hits his head like near the car and like pins him against the log, it's like he kind of almost like it's like lost and he like forgets like where he is, and then he goes to reach out to her and he's like almost like sister, you know, like kind of like that, like he's reaching out to her, and Jamie Lee Curtis almost like feels bad and
oh, you would have died, you would have died in this horror movie.
No, but
you would have fallen for it, you would have fallen for the sister bit, and you would have died, bro.
No, but that's why I think it makes also when Jamie Lee Curtis kills him like so much more impactful, because it's like she cares, like it's like obviously Michael Myers was something that tormented her life, and I'm sure something she wished she could have gotten rid of the entire, like obviously all her whole life, because it ruined her life. But the fact is, like, when she does finally kill him, like quote unquote facing her monster, it's not only done in a way of like, oh, I hate you, but this like weird, like, you know, it's her kind of like closing that door, but also having to deal with like family ties, also having to deal with, like, I feel like there's all these dimensions of things that I feel like come up when she does it. And like I feel the sort of the pain in her eyes, you know, she starts to tear up when she's looking at him. And like I said, there's like this weird almost like emotionalness that I kind of get when I see Michael kind of reach out like that. And it's almost kind of reminds me like he is human, or at least makes it seem like he is. And like Laurie just knows it. Like, even if he was, or there wasn't a humanity in him, it's not worth it. He's just too dangerous to be left alive. And then she does what she does.
I like what you're saying. I agree with what you're putting down. I completely understand why, you know,
He would have gotcha.
But yes, and also there, if it wasn't for Halloween Resurrection, I would also say you were right. But there was a definite reason why that hand was reaching out for Mintz, because that was not Michael Myers.
So like that's, and see, to me, because like I said, I watched the beginning of Resurrection, and then like I just kind of, I was like, what the fuck? It, to me, that feels a lot like in, like what they do in comic books when they just retcon stuff. And so like, I don't know if this was always the plan to have him be switched out, or if it was just something like, you know what, the movie did so well in theaters that we're gonna just make a sequel and retcon what happened before. Which I don't think is a fault of the movie that came before it. I think it's a fault of the movie that was made after. So I feel like that shouldn't diminish.
It was planned.
It was so out of character. That's the thing, is I would argue, and I'll always argue, that Michael Myers is not human. That he is a monster. That he has no humanity in him. And he's just an avatar of death. And that in that moment where he's reaching out like that and not just trying to still kill her, even though he's pinned to a log, I think is a definitive showcasing that that's not him. And that it was planned. I don't know. That's just my personal thing.
No, because, I agree.
He never does anything like that in any other moment, even in this same movie. If like when he was facing her through the little window in the door, if like she put her hand up and then like he put his hand up for a second and then he like tried to bash through the window or something, like maybe like a few moments like that peppered throughout, then sure, I would 100% buy it, you know?
It needs to be established. But
it's never there, yeah.
Anytime that Michael gets a chance to do it, he will slash it, or he will try to go for her. Halloween 2, when she was when they're putting all of the gas in the room at the end, what did he do? He just starts swinging the knife. He can't see, doesn't know where he's disoriented, he just starts swinging. Anytime that anything happens within this movie, the minute he gets close to his prey, he starts slashing. He starts going for it. And I almost forgot about the ending or the beginning of Resurrection when I watched this. I just got sucked into it. But the minute I saw him reaching out, I agree with Jose. That's, Michael is the shape. He is evil. Anytime that he is humanized like that, I can get why there was a spit of humanity, because Laurie is human. She's not a piece of shit. She's not evil. Yeah. That's why she would feel for that. But also, this woman has been traumatized beyond all hell. So, of course, she's going to, like, chop his head off, which I loved.
Yeah, which I love, too.
But this was all planned.
Well, like, that's the thing, too. Is like, I mean, I personally can't tell whether or not that reach out is, like, a cry for help or, like, him seeing his, like, this, like... Because that's the thing, is, like... After he kills as a child, he waits 15 years to then kill again as a, like an adult, and then he waits another 20 years supposedly to kill again now. So I feel like, maybe not saying that there's a maturity of him that happens, but I feel like from a perspective of like his, it's like he's also been kind of gunning towards his goal, and it's also like just within his reach. You know what I mean?
I mean, if we're going with the route that isn't the security guard and that is Michael Myers, then I guess. But that's not the case. You know,
well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, like I said, the whole retconning of like the ending of that movie to me feels very much like an afterthought, because it feels very much like a Batman shot through time type of thing, where I'm just like, all right, you know, like it feels very much like they were just like, oh, we want to make another one. Like, how do we make it for him to be alive? And that's why it's hard for me to be like, this was planned, because I feel like this movie was too smart and had too much thought into it and care to allow, I feel like, something like that.
Sir, you're forgetting producer decisions.
No, of course. But yet again, that's what I'm saying. The producer is the one that wanted the sequel. I'm sure that the original director was just making this movie. And that's what I'm saying, where I don't think it's a fault of the movie or the writers of this movie. I think it's a fault of the external forces that caused the sequel to happen. And that's why I'm like, I don't know if I can really blame this movie for something. You know what I mean? It's like just because, like, you know, Star Wars 789 is garbage, I'm not going to throw away the ones that came before it, you know, because, I mean, the other ones are still good. You know, I'm not going to blame what Star Wars did now compared to back then. It's just like, for me, I feel like this movie to me always felt like it was supposed to be the 20th year. Like, the reason they made it is because it was 20 years, right? Like, it was supposed to be this little thing, and then it turned bigger and they made it its own thing. And I feel like that's where I kind of come from.
It was a cash grab. Like, I don't know. I think you're thinking they put more care into it than I feel like they really did, honestly. Personal opinion. Because even Jamie Lee was like, eh, I was just kind of doing it for the money.
It's hard, obviously, to know with intentions. But it's just, even like Jamie Lee's criticism, her performance doesn't seem like phoned in. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of actors just phone in when it's just a paycheck. And I feel like her performance doesn't feel phoned in. Like, there's very little elements of this movie that feel like they're done without care. And that's where I think it's hard for me to be like, oh, this was like, it was originally planned for him to like swap out. I think the swapping out of the body feels very much like an afterthought.
In a sense it was, but and also in another sense it wasn't, because they shot the scene where he swapped him out that they used for Resurrection. They shot that on the same set, if not before, if not after, the same day they shot that.
So then it was 100% planned.
Yeah.
It was?
It was. No, it was. It was. Oh, okay. I saw that on the Blu-ray.
Ooh, special features.
Special features.
Yes, indeed. The what ifs, if, like, and I think that was the spirit that some of the, like, probably the director and people on set, they were kind of, because, you know, the minute, once something, it belongs to a company or a production studio, that's their piece, and you're just working on it, versus creating like a something on your own that belongs to you.
Also really quick, when did the security guard just died if the fucking truck pinned his ass? It would have made sense if Michael Myers survived.
That's also what I was confused. I was like, why is he not dead immediately? He's being pinned. But then I thought about Signs, and I was like, I
guess. Because, I mean, I don't know. That was.
I literally had that same thought.
But then I thought about Signs.
Like, that's the reason.
No, literally, that's what happened. I was literally
you're right.
Right there with Alonzo. I was like, that guy should be dead, though, because I knew what happens in Resurrection. I was like, how stupid. This is dumb. They didn't think this out. And then I thought about Signs, and I was like, I guess it's possible for, like, a little bit.
But no, I don't know. I just like that. And that's why, yet again, like, to me, it just, everything felt way too, like, I guess, definitive. But I don't know. I mean, if you say they shot it at the same time, I guess maybe it was the producer's decision. You know, like, I don't know. But like I said, it seemed to me like the movie's decision, or like what the film was trying to present, didn't cause that. And like I said, it's weird to me that, like, a sequel is the thing that makes this movie bad and not the movie itself.
Yeah, they...
You know? Oh, I mean, I wasn't saying it was a bad choice, necessarily, or that it made the movie bad. You know what I mean? I was just... It's just like, oh, that's not him. Yeah. You know? That was it.
I think originally, just to add a little more fire for you, Alonzo, they did plan on this being the third quote-unquote movie in the trilogy. It would have been Halloween 2, and then this one as like the, all right, this is the real, these are the real movies, you know. And then during production, they did plan, they're like, all right, probably like first, second day, like, all right, you're going to shoot this scene at the same time, just so that we have it ready for the sequel that's coming next year. And it's really bad.
Resurrection.
Yeah, yeah. We won't.
You know, funny enough, that was, I think, actually my first Halloween movie ever. Was Resurrection, and I had no idea what was going on, and I was such a young, stupid kid, and that was the only one I had seen for so long that for the longest time, whenever I would talk about Halloween or Michael Myers, I'd be like, oh yeah, he's crazy, and like how he was raised and like locked in chains and stuff, and like I'm so stupid because that was all fake. Straight up, I believed their fake story in the movie because I was so dumb, and I guess I didn't pay attention to what was going on in the movie at all because I was scared. I don't know.
You know, you're just going whatever you hear. I, besides everything that happened after the fact of this movie, I will say, like I said, going back to the care gone into the making of this movie, I just love all the little details. Besides the fact the third act gets a little choppy, the horror aspects get good. I wish that
no pun intended.
Pun intended. Regardless of how much time though, I wish that extra time we had with the movie, that third act gets really good. And I do love it. The minute that Michael gets there, it gets really.
Dude, the edgy girl. She gets the brutal. Most brutal death, and you know she's the edgy girl, because when she's introduced, she's not wearing her uniform except for that jacket, but she's wearing other clothes underneath.
She was raw.
So you know she's the edgy girl. Mm-hmm. But dude, when that. Her leg gets like crushed.
Oh, that hurt me.
By that dumbwaiter. That was brutal.
That was bad. I thought we were gonna get a real brutal one with Charlie, but his hand. There's that little fake out with his hand.
Dude, my butthole clenched so hard when that corkscrew went down the drain into the food disposal. I was like, no.
Oh.
And I love that his first, all he says is Michael, hi.
What a missed opportunity for that corkscrew to be just jammed into his head.
That's the thing. I thought it was going to be a lot. I think this movie was a lot more tame.
Off-screen. Come on.
It was done a little bit more.
That's why I don't remember the deaths. That's why, like, I was like, don't only like two people die in that movie? Because one of them's off screen. I don't know.
No, I agree. I do love the setup of it, and it's because they were trying to like do it for that whole reveal of, you see how, but
Edgy Girl's reveal with that light bulb or whatever.
That's so good.
That was intense. That was brutal.
That was a great looking dummy.
I wanted more of that.
I did. It reminded me a lot of just like Trick or Treat. I also love the counselor. I liked
Will.
His death.
Will.
Oh, yeah, cool. I liked him.
But then he fucked up when he shot LL Cool J.
He did.
I was kind of okay when he died.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, it's fine.
They just left him. They shot him. They're like, well, all right, peace.
Yeah.
He's dead.
You don't revive him. You don't go back. There's no revive.
So I was like, all right, Will, you can die.
That was a nice little subplot with her and that guy. I liked
he was a good dude.
It's like, you deserve this. Have fun. It's like the little bit of light you get in your life. I also like the little side. One of my favorite scenes of the movie is when we get Janet Leigh as Norma, the school secretary.
Why is that your favorite thing?
That is Jamie Lee Curtis's mother. She was in nearly all of Alfred Hitchcock's films, including Psycho.
Ah.
That's why.
That's the Psycho car, too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. The exact same car, same license plates. The soundtrack kind of cues into the Psycho theme just for a little bit. It's a nice little nod. Little campy, but you know, hey, I'll take
very
whatever.
Very naughty.
And they couldn't just put a few more knives into that knife block.
You know, they couldn't figure out what mask they wanted either, because there was 5 different masks throughout this entire production.
Oh, shoot.
Also, did you notice the CGI mask at all? Because I really didn't even know what the fuck happened when it happened.
I noticed it, but I didn't know what I was noticing, if that makes sense. When I watched it, I was like, why did that look weird? And then once I kind of started looking into the movie and stuff, I was like, oh, that must have been the CGI shot. Because I saw that they mentioned that there was a shot that they had to do a CGI mask. I was like, that must have been it.
It was Henry. It's like if Henry Cavill's mustache was only in one scene, and it's like you would have noticed it instead of the whole fucking movie.
I wonder why they had to do a CGI shot. That's all weird.
They, because it's kind of like why there was 4 different masks. There was originally a K&B mask, which they were going to be using in the beginning, which is what Steve Miner wanted to use. It's the one where you see most of his eyes. And this one, you would have seen more of his eyes, and you see him in a lot of the wide shots. It's been used majority of the movie. Mustafa Akkad, a lot of audiences did not like the mask, and that because of that, they went to do reshoots for it. And they used the one from Curse of Michael Myers 6 in several shots. So there's shots in this movie with the old mask from the last movie. There's shots in this movie with the new mask. And then they commissioned Stan Winston Studios to make a new mask, which was comprised of several different other masks. And then they found an issue with the mask in one of them. And for that one shot, they decided, let's just play with the CGI a little bit.
I don't even know when it actually happened. Like, I just remember you guys talking about it before I watched it. And I was like, when the fuck did they do the mask?
It's a blink and you miss it scene. I honestly didn't notice it if they didn't bring it up in like the little documentary at the end of the movie. But yeah, I had my issue. I just thought it was funny.
No, I feel that. Yeah. I just thought it was weird. I'm like, yeah, in the 90s, they're using CGI. That's brave. That's brave.
98, right before we started getting into that real, full character CGI that we would get with the cinematic landmark, that would be Jar Jar Binks.
So, oh boy.
1 year away.
Where do you think this lands for you on like the Halloween spectrum?
I would put this as my 4th favorite. For me, 1, 2, and then I'd also put Rob Zombie's before this one. This is easily, it's the better one out of all the other ones, but on the spectrum, when it comes to me, that's just where it lands. And I think that's kind of where it's going to stay at this point.
Probably very similar to yours, but I would put the newest one ahead of this one, I think, still.
It's hard. I mean, I the first one is always going to be the first one, because it's just the best. it's just the best. Honestly, for me, just what it does for me as like how much I enjoy it, it's gonna be this one for number 2, and then probably the Rob Zombie one, the first Rob Zombie one, and then after that probably like Halloween 2, And then I haven't seen the rest, so I can't really speak on the rest.
I have my issues with the 2018 one. I've only seen it twice. I haven't seen it since it came out, and when I got it on Blu-ray, there are aspects that I feel get lost when you take away the family aspect, which we want to talk about that. What do you, I personally didn't, that was, and that it's was a choice.
Still there, kind of.
Yes, but no, he's not her brother.
There's
he's just
a daughter
guy.
And there's a daughter and there's a granddaughter though. And it's still like family trauma and family bonds.
But when connecting
so there's still
to
some
the
family themes,
but with Michael,
I mean, why does it have to be her brother? You know, the first one doesn't establish that and it's the best one. So why use that as a reference for why it's not good?
Yeah, well, that's something I've always said about the first one that I've told Marcel a couple of times. Like, I like the first one a lot because Laurie Strode just very much feels like the victim, you know, like just like across the street or something. Like she's just like she's wrong place, wrong time. Like it could have been anybody else. Like if they were there, which is like kind of what made the first Halloween so scary. It's like anybody could go crazy and go mad and be a mass murderer. And like I think that's what made this movie so terrifying back when it came out, because the concept of like a serial killer just literally going mad and on a rampage was just terrifying, especially with all the like actual real serial killers going on in the 70s and the 80s. But I think afterwards, like with like even Halloween 2, I think it's still a little bit justifiable that he's still going after her because it's within the same night, so it's like okay, like the night continues, whatever. But then afterwards, I feel like it's just weird for me why he wouldn't just go for another random victim versus just like targeting her specifically. You know, like I guess
she beat him.
Yeah, but I feel like technically still there's like other people that got away.
Who?
Doesn't Laurie run away with that boyfriend that gets knocked out in the car?
Oh, does that? I don't think it counts the second one as canon.
Oh, and Loomis, I guess. Doesn't he? Loomis technically.
Well, he's dead.
If we're going with that 2018 one, it's just that first one and then this one. So Loomis died of natural causes.
He's just old. Yeah, it's been 40 years and he was like 60 in the first game.
I guess what I mean is like, you know, because you just said who survived. I mean, like, obviously I don't know the canonness of like the Halloweens. Like we were talking about a little bit earlier before the podcast started, is like I feel like most slasher films, like other than Michael Myers, never really have like I guess intended targets that kind of carry over from like film to film. They're just kind of like randos that get killed at any like slasher, whether it be like, you know, Freddy Krueger or Chucky, or it's just like it's a new batch of like kids or people that just gets like slaughtered. But Michael Myers has always seemed to be like this like connection to family ties, or Laurie Strode more specifically. And I think for some of the films, I think it felt a little bit more justifiable because they were related, so it makes sense why she was always the automatic intended target. But that was kind of the weirdest things for me that I had, like it was like kind of hard for me to accept, is like she was a target, but I'm like, I feel like they could have made so many other, you know, like they could have gone after so many other people, like, you know, just be the same victims, like how Laurie Strode was in the first one, you know, like I don't know if any of the characters that we met in that Halloween, I don't know if they survived, in the 2018 one, but if like they did, like, is he gonna go after all of them again, or is he just gonna go after Laurie Strode again?
It's planned, you know right I mean? Now, because right now Halloween Kills is the sequel, and that one is completely done. It was supposed to. We would have been, if 2020 wasn't such a dog shit year that it was, we would have been watching it right now and probably reviewing it for this podcast. But as of now, it's scrapped due to, you know, COVID and everything like that, and we'll be getting it next Halloween, and then hopefully, we're gonna be ending it with Halloween Ends, which will be the year after the fact. And that's for me, it's like when you're saying, Jose, that it's like, why does it have to be the brother? Does that negate the first movie if the first movie doesn't really have that involved in it? Maybe that's just to me, because for me, I've always just known that as like being in like the horror zeitgeist, that like, you know, Michael Myer and Laurie Strode are brother and sister. Even before I saw the movie, I just knew that. That's the thing, it's like Friday the 13th, Jason's mother.
Like, that's his mom. That's always going to be his mom.
These key established parts. So for me, I've just always been able to view it like that. It's always been as part of it. And that's why I think it's so funny, because like last week we were talking with Paul. There is an aspect to it that I do find interesting, of having it be like not just, you know, what it is now, where it's like he just saw her. And like when she walked by the house and dropped off the information for like the people who were for the Myers house, because their parents were doing Realty, and that's that in itself is terrifying. Just like you're just a random victim.
No, I don't know. I mean, I have to rewatch the 2018 one because I think the most difficult part for me, I guess I would say, is like kind of like Marcel said, they were always kind of related. Like at least you know, and like that's the thing is like I'm not a big Michael Myers fan. Like I love the movies, but I'm not like super into the lore. So like even at times, like when I rewatch the movies, I'm like, oh yeah, Laurie Strode, she's the woman that survives, or she's the victim, like. You know what I mean? Like, I remember Marcel was telling me about when Jamie Lee Curtis was returning. I was like, why? She wasn't in the Busta Rhymes one. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in my head, I was like, I just,
she
you know, like,
she was in the very beginning. He kills her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right.
He finally kills her. And then he goes into arresting. But then they explain it like anyone in the house he considers family. And so he has to kill his family. And so when they move into the house for the show, it triggers him or some shit.
The movie's so fucking stupid.
No, literally, but, like something like that. And Busta Rhymes kung fu's him.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. I do remember that kung fu scene. But no, so like, I don't know. Like, so for me, I haven't seen the Halloween 2018 one. I do remember thinking some of the elements were a bit comical. And I remember there really being only one really cool scene, and that was like the one long shot in the middle of the movie. But I think it just became, like I said, I think like Marcel, it became a little difficult for me to, like, I guess just justify the fact that he, like, waited for, like, chased her down after all this time without being, a family connection. But I think if I could look at it through, like, oh, you know, like, now that she has survived, it's, like, the one thing he never accomplished. So that's why he became obsessed with it, which, I mean, you could definitely put that in the first movie, which would easily be able to carry over into this one.
You kind of see it in the first one because he's stalking her the whole movie, right? Like, he becomes obsessed with her. I mean, that's why he goes after her, period, right? I mean,
yeah,
you kind of see it.
True. First half of that movie, he's just walking around without the mask. It's just some guy. Because he steals the rope, the knives, and the Halloween mask from in the middle of the movie. Or like probably 25 minutes into it. So he's just stalking her.
This crazy guy.
I don't know why. I know it was more than just a family. I know it was more than just a family thing, but I know them not being related did play a little bit of a role.
I know why.
But it wasn't the biggest thing.
I'm on the same wavelength as you. I just do think it's funny how we've now seen this same idea tackled with the same franchise now twice, technically three times, with 4, H2O, and then the 2018 one. It's just make a decision, end it, and hopefully, I mean, the Halloween movies are kind of just, you just take them for what they are at this point. I whatever amount of enjoyment and kills and thrills that I can get out of them, I can.
I feel like they should just keep to, like, I guess some of the purest elements that made Michael Myers. Like, I feel like they could just make forever sequels without having them have to be connected. You know, he's a stalker who's a, you know, a boy gone crazy, or like the Shape, you know, the evil, and he just murders, you know, like maybe with no rhyme or reason, I guess you would say, but he just becomes obsessed with one individual, but let's say it's a woman, and he just stalks her and tries to kill her. And I feel like you could just make an endless repeat of those, and I feel like trying to have the whole family ties or like the connection to one character or to one victim, I think that's what becomes a problem, is because like all these like 7, 8, 9, whatever, however many of these they are, they all keep trying to like connect them together in a way that makes sense, and then all it does is make the ones before worse somehow, or like just fuck up the story to where half of them don't even exist anymore because you just have to restart it because like it's trying to be a cinematic universe, and I'm just like, it doesn't have to be. It's, you know.
Well, I mean, you could
just make like a good slasher. You know,
I do think, to an extent, though, it's like that's one thing that I do like that about this movie that they did is they just get rid of retcon for the most part all of the ones that came before. I do love about the 2018 was that the movement, the way that Michael in that movie, is as strong as I feel the first one is. He's really scary. They nailed him.
They make him really scary in that one.
So good.
When he drops the teeth, that was crazy.
I'm sad he didn't kill the baby, though. I was like, he should have killed that baby.
You know, I guess that's where he doesn't cross that line.
I'm like, he's pure evil. Why didn't he kill the baby? Apparently, he just stabbed the baby.
He didn't kill Lori when she was a baby that night.
Maybe he likes babies.
So that's his thing, I guess. He just, it's, you know, and they're not they're pure. They're pure. They're without sin. They're without. You can go into that. It's like, does he
actually? We're all born with original sin. All right, don't let me get into this.
We're not making this a religious podcast. but that being said, yeah, there are elements to this movie that I think that they grabbed and they brought into the next one that I like, and I think it on its own it is what it is.
I think what I will say is I didn't know much about the lore about like Michael Myers and stuff, and with H2O, like I said, to me it just always kind of had this like a referenced idea of like it being a good movie in the back of my head. As I've seen like kind of all, like not all of them, but a good amount of the Halloweens now, and us talking about the lore, and you guys like telling me a lot about like a lot of the making of, and really kind of making me, I guess you would say, like a more or less of a Michael Myers fan. I do have much more of an appreciation of like all the direction, all the input that these movies have taken. And then also with this movie specifically, I not only did I feel that I always like really enjoyed this as a kid, but a lot of the feelings of not knowing all the backstory behind these kind of ended up just amplifying now when I rewatched it again. And I kind of like was able to not only just enjoy for what it was, but also appreciate it a little bit more because of the films before it that we had watched together, which was really cool for me, honestly, because like I said, to me, I've always just kind of viewed slasher movies as, like I said, just kind of like they were just, you know, like it's a horror character, a horror figure, a horror icon that just kind of, you know, had fodder put in front of him to burn and kill and slash. And then, you know, sometimes the kids win or they defeat them in some way. One survives. But most of the time I just kind of always thought of like how extreme could the kills get or whatever. But it's really refreshing to know that Michael Myers as a series have always had a little bit more of a thought put behind it. And the fact that this one also felt like there was always a thought behind it and done with a lot of care. And I really enjoy H2O. I could probably watch this anytime. And if it takes me the ability to pretend like Resurrection doesn't exist, which is very easy for me to do because I feel like it just doesn't, because I still haven't seen it. I just saw the beginning of it. That's okay with me. And I can just enjoy H2O for what it is.
Better than I remember it. Still just kind of okay. I'd give it a 6. A light 6. I think that it had the blueprint of what could have been like a really, really solid movie. And it was just like, okay. It was alright. It wasn't bad. It was enjoyable. I think they were playing with some themes that could have been explored more. You know, family and trauma and how that's inherited and passed on and how it affects us and trying to cope with it and whether we can cope with it, things like that. I think that could have been very interesting to mess with more. And I just needed more horror, I think. I don't know, more horror elements. Take out some of the LL Cool J. He was useless, man. He didn't even do anything. He stops her from stabbing him at the end. It's like, no, let her keep stabbing him. What are you doing? He just does nothing. He gets shot and just does nothing. Lets him in. Ugh. But, you know, it was all right. It was all right.
Yeah, my thoughts on the movie since the last time I watched it are obviously very different. I have a different perspective of it now that I know what a post-Halloween 2 Michael Myers Laurie showdown could look like. And in some instances, I view this movie in a higher regard than I did before. In other instances, I think that horror is it's a little more Scooby-Doo than we're gonna get thrown in Ed Gein's basement, which is there needs to be a fine line and on that meter, and it needs to be gearing more towards I'm gonna shit my pants because I'm gonna die right now. Those slow horror elements are there in comparison to being non-existent at all in the before this in the franchise. It's got lost, and they brought it back to an extent. I like my Halloween to be a little more brutal. I like my Michael to be a little bit more evil. Overall, though, I do like the movie. And I do think I love the fact that there was a lot of love put in this. I would easily recommend this over 4, 5, 6, sometimes 3. Three I've tried to revisit sometimes and just try to give it that look because, you know, people keep telling me, like, I gotta rewatch it. I think this movie gets a lot more done right than wrong. That being said, it gets a good amount, like, questionably wrong. And then I will not talk about Resurrection. But on its own, hell of a good movie to put on. But there are better choices, especially in this franchise. So that is all I have to say on that. And I believe that's also all we have to say this year when it comes to horror, for the moment, at least for this month. Because we're at the end of the month. It is, by the time you are listening to this podcast, it is either Halloween night or sometime randomly in the year. Thank you guys for joining us for this. This has always been something that I've looked forward to every year. I love horror. We all generally tend to have our different views and stances on what is horror, which is why I think having all of you guys here, Paul too, in this show to kind of like just give that balance, because PMG, we try to be, especially more so now, is that we're creatives. We are all, we all have our different stances. We all have our different opinions on this, but we're all enthusiastic of the same thing. And I think that's the beauty of hanging out with all my friends. It's the beauty of discussing movies after we watch them. But yeah, thank you guys for watching. As of now, we're going to be now returning back to a more contemporary form. There is no set plan for what our shows will be about. They can be about anything involving pop culture, anything that is relevant to us in the movement or just in conversation. If you want to give us a follow and like, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, at Pretty Much Geek. You can also find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts at PMG Podcast. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
This has been Alonzo.
Laters.
Jose.
Goodbye.
The spirit of Paul and me, Marcel Delgado. Until next year, you guys, happy Halloween. And until next PMG podcast, we'll catch you guys later.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.